Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, hosted by serial entrepreneur Denise Griffiths. Denise offers a full menu of on-the-web services for all your online needs. Denise and her team of virtual assistants can help manage your online business, including social media channels, blogs, web portals, and more. YourOfficeOnTheWeb.com is a comprehensive resource to help you combine the power of your brand, your connections, and innovative ideas to develop a full online strategy that can guarantee a strong profitable impact on your business.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and each week I am honored to share the microphone with really interesting people. These are people who are entrepreneurs, solopreneurs, authors, speakers, small business owners. They can be virtual assistants, web developers, and frankly, just anyone who has a wonderful story to share. And these are people who are excited to freely share their business wisdom, as well as tips and actionable advice. Excuse me. In short, they are willing to help us shorten our learning curve as we navigate the know, like, and trust economy. And today I welcome Heather Ann Havenwood to the show. Heather is the CEO of Havenwood Worldwide, LLC, and I love this, Chief Sexy Boss, which is trademarked. She is a serial entrepreneur and is regarded as a top authority on internet marketing, business strategies, and just a whole host of other things. I'll get her to tell you about that. Since marketing her first online business in 1999, bringing together clients and personal coaches, she has played an active role in the online marketing world since before most even had a home computer. In 2006, she started and developed and grew an online information marketing publishing company from zero to over $1 million in sales in less than 12 months. Starting without a list, a product, a name, or an offer, she molded her client into a successful guru now known as an expert in his field. I wonder who that is. I might ask. Heather Ann has been named by a few as an icon creator or the wizard behind the curtain. She has instructed, coached, and promoted hundreds of entrepreneurs, leading them down the path to success. She has produced and managed over 350 seminars and events and hosted teleseminars with many top online thought leaders such as Richard Flint, John Alanis, Susan Bratton, Alicia Little, Tom Antion, Alex Mandoshin, legend Joe Sugarman, Anthony Blake, David Lacani, Robert Sheeman, and many, many others. And she is currently the author of Sexy Boss. I love that. How the empowerment of women is changing the rule book for sex, money, and success. Heather, welcome to the show. I'm so glad to have you here today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for reading my bio. I should probably shorten it, but thank you. Thank you so much.
No, it's important. Like I told you in the our virtual green room, not everybody reads the show notes, and people may be listening in iTunes or, you know, Libsyn. So they really need to know who it is that they're listening to, I think. So it takes a little bit of time, but I do think it's important. And I love Sexy Boss. How in the heck
thank
did that
you.
Come about?
No problem telling you the story. So, I mean, it kind of starts with my bankruptcy, and it was back in 2007 when all that kind of went, 2006, 2007 when it kind of crashed, and going through that whole process. And so I went through a tumultuous couple of years, and it was around 2009. I'm just kind of crawling my way through that process, and I went to go visit my dear friend and mentor, and he's also the foreword of my book, Joe Sugarman, and we're in Vegas, and we're having salad in Vegas over just chatting, and we're just talking about business and life, and he's this amazing amazing businessman and multimillionaire, and he says it himself, I've failed more than I've succeeded, and he's just been such an amazing person in my life through the process of me kind of building myself back up, and he kind of looked at me and goes, you know, you're kind of like a sexy boss, and I'm like, what? He's like, well, you're like sexy, but you're like the boss, you know, you're going after what you want, I just love that, and I was like, huh, kind of a name, you know. So we looked at it, and we actually, he's my business partner in that, and we trademarked it, and we looked at it, and what's interesting about that, so we went through the process of trademarking. I mean, to me, I'm just a solo little entrepreneur, and we're going through this little process called trademarking, right? And next thing I know, I get this call from our lawyer, and she says, yeah, well, Hugo Boss is contacting us, they don't want you to trademark it. And I'm like, what? You know, there are these $500 an hour lawyers in New York or whatever going, we don't want this little girl at the Ravenwood to have sexy boss. We think it's going to be a hindrance on our Hugo boss. And I'm like,
really?
Yeah, really. And we're still kind of in the conversation with them. Like, they're kind of starting to back down a little bit. Because here's what I played, right? I thought, okay, here's an opportunity for me to be on Good Morning America. Like, little solo entrepreneur gets beat up by big, big boss, Hugo boss. You know, I was ready to go on Fox News tomorrow. But I didn't, and they kind of backed down. But it is interesting because they did kind of say, well, you can't use a font like this, and you can't do this, and you can't do that. They get all these stipulations because I didn't want sexy boss to be a hindrance on Hugo boss. So I found that really interesting. So here's what I thought, though. I thought, I'm onto something, right? If I'm ruffling the feathers of Hugo boss, which is just huge, right, then I must be onto something. So I stuck with it, and I wrote my first book, Sexy Boss. And that really book is about my story. And the tagline is how the empowerment of women is changing the rule book for money, success, and sex. But honestly, it's really my story of sharing what happened. Because at the end of my bankruptcy, when it was complete, a friend of mine, Alex Mendozian, said, one day you're going to write a book about this. And I literally am in tears. I'm like, I don't want anyone to know I went through this, right? I was like, no way. I was like yelling at him. And he's like, no, one day you will when you're ready, you know. And he's right. So here we are 10 years later, and I wrote a book about it. He was right.
But what prompted you to write the book? I mean, it's one thing for Alex Mendozian to say it, and of course, if he says it, you're probably going to do it. But
yeah,
what prompted you? I mean, you had resistance to it, obviously. Most of us would. So
I think I was ready. It was kind of like that. After I was kind of in this point of, I'm tired of being a victim to my own stuff and poor me. I was tired of struggling. And I thought, you know, the best way to come out of the resurgence for myself was to share my story. And once it's kind of like a release, like, oh, here's what I'm going through, right? Here's who I am. Here's the truth. And from there, I feel like my intention was, if I could share what really happened, the truth, I hope to empower one person, man or woman, one person, that it's okay, whatever they're going through, and they can get through it. That was the intention. But part of it was also like a cathartic. It was getting it out there. So sometimes people, when they do books, they want to do a book to create the expertise or like the business card or to create, you know, what I call it, attention. I didn't have that. I want to put something out there that's really my story, and I don't want to do a promotion. So I didn't do a huge launch. Like, I didn't do the big Amazon launch and hire. So I didn't do any of that. I put it out. I just put it out there. And I did it in 90 days, by the way. That was another thing. It was like the moment I said, I'm going to do this, from the moment I said, I'm writing this book to the end, and I mean the end, meaning the Audible, because there's an Audible. I did my own audiobook, and on Amazon and everything. I mean, everything. It was done in 90 days. Boom. And it was about the cathartic process of like just getting my story out there, because I'm one of those people that I have a hard time sharing what's really going on with me. I'm not like I don't put all my emotions on my shoulder, right? People have to like constantly dig, like, what's real? My mom was always like, what's really going on with you, Heather? And I'm like, I am fine, you know? And so me putting something out there that showed a skinned knee and the bruised eye was hard for me. So it was a process. And what's interesting about that is I launched it, quote unquote, published it November 2013. And again, I didn't have this, I'm going to be famous. It wasn't about that. It was just getting out there. But then in January 2016, as we're speaking, I was told by a friend that I met on podcasting. She was like, oh, congratulations on your book being number one bestseller. And I was like, oh, you're so sweet, but you're lying. Like, that's not true. She's like, no, it is. And she shows me the link. And I'm like, oh, my God, you know. And it was number one bestseller on Amazon. And I was just so proud of that because it came naturally. It wasn't like that push, you know, the Amazon push. And I felt really proud of that because I felt, well, I hope that just one person reads it and it makes a difference. So that's why I did it. That's really why.
Well, that That makes sense. And look, I totally get it. I'm a very private person myself, and you know, my go-to response is, it's all good. Everything's good.
It's all good.
Right? Maybe falling down. Or my ankles may be deep in mud, but it's all good.
I'm all good. Yeah. Right. That's fine. I think it came from my Southern upbringing. I know
well,
that it came
yeah.
culturally. Like, oh, I'm good. Oh, I'm great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do that down here in the South. Like, it's all fine. But let's back up. But let's back up just a bit. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, some pretty famous names here in the online world. So how did you meet these people? I mean, how did you get to, you know, mentor and partnership with a lot of these people? I know some of our audience is going, how'd she do it? I want to know. I'm one of those people, by the way.
I was in the industry. I've been in the speaking author industry since 2001. And so I've done over 450 seminars myself produced. I've been to who knows how many. I've stopped counting because I don't want to look at all the money I spent, right? So I've been to a ton of events. So over a period of time, you meet and connect with people. I mean, I met Joe Sugarman probably in 2003 at four at an event. I met him many times. Now we're dear friends, Alex Mendozian. We met many times back in big seminar days. This is like taking people back. And then I worked with him, and he's still a friend and mentor, and Richard Flynn. All these people were people I met, we connected with on a business level, and then became friends, and many of them mentors, especially the ones during my bankruptcy I reached out to. You know, they were friends, and then I reached out to them, like, I know you could probably help me here. And they became mentors of mine and dear friends. So honestly, I've been in the industry since 2001. And how I got in the industry is kind of a weird phenomenon. It's not something I woke up one day and was like, I want to be in the speaking. No. In fact, when I was a kid from age, till about age seven, starting 7 to 14, I was in speech therapy because I didn't speak. I was really shy. So for 7 years of my life, I went to speech therapy twice a week, every week. And because I didn't really speak well, I stuttered, I didn't say my R's correctly, all that kind of stuff. So that's why I don't have a Southern accent, because all my whole family is Southern in Texas, but I'm not, because I went to speech therapy for 7 years, so my speech therapist kind of bailed it out of me. But here's what happened. I was in Texas. I worked for a company called Southwestern Bell back in the day, the Bell days, and I started doing sales for them at a very young age. And I was working for them, when I was 22, and I was outside sales, and that's an all-man's world. And I was out and in that world, and I became number one in sales out of the whole country. And here I am, outside sales. I'm like the youngest one, the only female, and I'm number one in the country. And my boss tells me, quote, you don't deserve it. And the next month,
Excuse me? I got fired.
Yeah, she's a female boss, too. Tell me I didn't deserve it.
And that makes it even worse.
Yeah, it was. It really did. It really put a hindrance on my life. Mary Hotard Fiesel, I'll never remember her. Never forget her. And she told me I didn't deserve it, and she fired me after I became number one. Basically, she just took all my accounts away and said, oh, you don't have any accounts anymore. And she fired me. And it was my first what I call gut, you know, like punch in the stomach, because I had it that if I work for a business and I make them money, they're going to reward me with continually giving me money and a job. Like, that's what I was told, right? And so it really messed with my brain. And I went into some deep depression for a couple months. Here I am, 25 years old, out of a job, and I'm confused, and I don't really want to jump into another job because I have this, like, I don't want to happen to me again, you know, kind of like a bad relationship. Like, I don't want to have that happen again. So what happened is, and I'm telling you this for a reason. So here I am at my girlfriend's house. I'm out of a job in Dallas, Texas, and this infomercial comes on. Okay. And it says, do you want to own your own business? Do you want to control your life? And my ears are like, yes, right. That's me, because I felt like I knew I could build something, but I don't want to have the ability someone ever could take that away from me again. And that's all I knew. That's all I knew, right? So I raised my hand. I went to this little seminar, and they're at the front of the room, the 2-hour presentation, saying, we're going to teach you how to make money in real estate. You know, you could do this, right? And I'm like, yeah, I'm all excited. I have no money. I got my credit card.
I remember those days.
You remember those days, right?
I went to one or two of them and just went, I was okay until they started the hard sales pitch. And then I was like the lady in the back of the church going, oh, hell no, and I was leaving. I mean, I was barreling people over just to get away from them. But, yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you know, so this is a couple of years back, right? And I'm telling you this story because it really is
more than
a funny story. Right, more than a couple. And here I am. And now I have a gold credit card, American Express, but I don't have a lot of money on it. You know what I mean? So it's like $3,000. And they said, but for your spouse, it was like $1,000 or something. So I nudged the guy next to me. And I go, hey, you doing it? He's like, yeah. I'm like, can I be your spouse? And he's like, sure. What's your name? So we walk over there with different last names, different addresses, the whole nine yards. And we're like, this is my spouse, you know. And they're looking at us like, we know you're lying, right? We're going to lie your butt off. But they just kind of gave me the week.
$1,000 is $1,000. They
exactly.
didn't care.
They gave me the week. They took my credit card. They ran it for the $1,000. And I never saw that guy again. So I went to the event. And long story short, I guess I made an impression with the speaker and the staff. And they kind of kept asking me, like, who am I? What do I do? And I told them kind of my story. And they said, well, hey, why don't you come work for us? So I moved to Florida. And I started working for the largest seminar company in the country. And I started traveling the country doing the seminars, doing those. I started traveling the country doing that event. That's how I got into this business. And then from there, working with speakers and helping them on stage, how did they close from stage, and on and on and on it goes. So that's how I got into this business. It was from an infomercial.
That's crazy. You probably saw me tearing out of the back room, though. I'm a tall brunette, just in
you
case you have
did.
Any memories of that.
Probably.
I'm like, oh, no,
got to
go. I would go to them just honestly because they were fascinating to attend. To be very frank, I never bought anything from any one of them, and I went to a fair number. I was there to study the psychology of the group, the crowd. And I didn't know that at the time. You know, I recognized that later on, but I was like, this is interesting. I mean, it was fascinating to watch how people sold from the stage and how the people in the crowd were just like, oh, my gosh, yes. And then, of course, come to find out years later, almost nobody did anything with the products that they bought, which, you know, that's, again, it's a psychology thing. But, you know, they get all kind of excited. And not to say that the products are bad. I mean, I almost pulled out my credit card once or twice. But the psychology of it all was fascinating to watch.
So I fell in love with the psychology. You're right. I fell in love with the process of sales. That's what I learned. Mm-hmm. It's like my first company, when I worked for SBC, I became number one in sales, but it was kind of one of those, like, I don't know how I did it. I just did it. Like, I was like, someone said, can you break down how you did that? I was like, I don't know. But when you're in that environment, you have to, there's every single tiny little thing, what we wear, what we say, how we speak to you, everything's a process and it's looked at. I mean, every little piece. So I started to learn that psychology. Now, nowadays, people are like, oh, why are you talking about this? Okay, here's what they're doing nowadays. It's called VSL. It's called video sales letter. So nowadays, they watch every click you do. How long do you watch the video sales letter? Did you click on this button? So they're doing the exact same thing nowadays. It's just an electronic format. But back, what's interesting is I feel I have kind of a one-up on the online world in one way because I really understand the true psychology. Because, like, for instance, you talk about you just left. When you're an online, we don't know who left, and we don't really care. We're like, oh, well, look at the numbers. But when you're in person and you're looking at someone's eyes and they're denying or rejecting you, you have to deal with that. It's a whole nother level, or someone's running out the back of the room, or someone's like, you guys suck. All this, the rejection is in
now,
your
that
face.
That wasn't me. I never said
no,
that.
No, it wasn't you. I'm just somebody else here. I remember this. You guys suck. He's like running like, yeah, it's horrible. You know, but you have to deal with that and you have to manage the space. You can't just turn off a computer or you can't just like delete the email. I mean, it's real. Like there's other people and the psychology of the room and everything. So what happened is my group I started with when I first, they threw me on a group. We were called the C group. We were the worst group, basically. Our speaker was brand new. He didn't know what he was doing. We were all new. And we were going to places like Peoria, Illinois, You know, like, there's no one there in Pure. I mean, do you know where that is? I don't even know where that is. It was
I've heard of it,
right. So our friends or our coworkers, we're spending the same amount of time on the road, slumping our, you know, our bags across the country, and they're going to New York and L.A., and they're seeing, like, triple the amount of people, so they're making more money. And I thought, well, I want to make more money. I don't want to do this, right? We're eating ramen noodles over here. So I started to do what you did. I started going to other people's seminars, like Robert Allen, Ted Thomas. I mean, you know these people. Marshall Silver. These guys were like the masters on stage. And I started to study. I was in the back of the room, like, literally taking notes. How are they doing that? Why are they saying this? The NLP behind. I mean, I was taking notes, and I'd bring it back to my speaker and go, okay, try this. Okay, try this. And so we started to slowly go up our numbers. So we went from like 10% closing ratio to like 20%. And now we're going to LA. Now we're getting steaks, some red wine at night versus like ramen noodles. So we're happy. And that's how I got into the business. And then eventually I transitioned that onto online in 2003 and 2004, and on it goes. So that's the essence of my business and why I met all these people. Because I went to 1,000 different seminars, and they were either speakers or they were running their own events. And a lot of them I consulted on how to run events, how to run that process of running an event, how to close more from stage. Because if you're going to get in your car, get on an airplane, slump around, get away from your family for 3 days, you want to make sure you're making the most money you can, you know? So it was really important for these speakers to learn the art of sales presentations. And nowadays, they do it online. And that's how I got into the business of direct response marketing, because I feel like I'm in the business of direct response marketing at the end of the day. And that's why I met Joe Sugarman, and on it goes. And even in 2013, I did an event. It was me, Joe Sugarman, Joe Polish, John Benson, and John Carlton. And these are all people I've known and met for years and years and years. Yeah, I've known them all.
Those are big names.
They're big names. And that's why I talk about I'm the wizard behind the curtain, meaning I've been behind the scenes for a long time. You know, and so I'm just now kind of what I call coming out, right? So that's how I met all those people, to answer your question, a long way.
That is wonderful. There's a comment in the, you'll love, there's a comment in the chat room, says, she's really infectious, isn't she? A big smile. So he's really enjoying what you're talking about. Listen, you mentioned, you know, a little bit earlier that you suffered from this kind of crippling shyness. Yeah, you went into sales, which terrifies most people. And, of course, public speaking is, I guess, identified as the number one biggest fear in America. How in the heck? I mean, what was your thought process?
God, I don't, you know, my mom's no longer with us. I don't know what she would say right now with that. I don't know. But when I was younger, in my, you know, pretty much all through high school, I was really shy. I know people go, what? You know, but if you ask my sister, who beat me up all the time, I was shy. I was very shy. And I didn't have a lot of outwardness confidence, I guess you would say. And it wasn't till my parents divorced, and my last year in high school, I had to go in a foster family. And I think I just kind of started to get, turn that shyness into aggression and just be really out there. And I started to learn just to speak my mind, you know, because I felt like, well, that's all I have is speaking my mind. I kind of felt like out of control a little bit what's going on with the family and the divorce and this kind of tragedy going on around me. So I felt the only thing I could do was just speak my mind. And that's what I did. What's interesting, though, I was a smart girl. I mean, I got like a 3.8 or something in high school, and I became really socially active, and I was in drill team and all these kind of fun things. But what's really interesting is I actually failed my first year in college. I went to Baylor University, and I failed out my first year. Very people know that either. Now I end up graduating. I have a master's degree in online marketing, believe it or not. But what's interesting is that my first semester in Baylor University, I failed out. And I actually ended up going to TCU and University of Texas at Arlington and other colleges and Full Sail University and on and on and on. And mainly I think I failed out. I mean, looking back, I partied too much. But honestly, I think it was because I didn't know where I was going. And I think one of the biggest things in life, I hate when people ask kids, 17, 18-year-olds, what do you want to do with the rest of your life? I mean, come on.
I know.
Really? You know,
their brains aren't even formed yet. It's ridiculous.
Right. I mean, so, you know, here I am in this pressure sense, of like, what do you want to do the rest of your life? And I have people around me, like they, I feel like they have it all figured out. And I'm over here like, I don't have this figured out. You know, I'm clueless. And so I think that was part of the process. That was part of the process. So I became on my own. I was really on my own by the time I was 16. My mom couldn't take care of me anymore. I was in foster care. My dad remarried. And so I became on my own. And I had to toughen up, really. And I think that's what happened. And especially in the when I started traveling the country with the seminars, that really opened me up to life. Because I was kind of secluded, you know, just in Texas. And here I am going all over the country. I'm traveling by myself really much. I mean, I have a group, but really we're all by ourselves and we meet up. And I learned how to take care of myself at a very young age. And I didn't have a backup. I didn't have Daddy Warbucks. I didn't have a spouse. I didn't have any of that. I didn't have a big brother who was going to come in and save the day. It was like me. If I didn't eat, it's my fault. You know, if I didn't get what I want, that's my fault. So I think that kind of created somebody, went from a shy girl to a very outspoken and I'm going to say what I want and then let everybody else deal with that kind of conversation. And I've now kind of pulled that back a lot because I felt like the only way to be successful in life is to be like a man. And I don't mean that derogatory. So a man's listening. It was like, well, these guys are successful, so I got to be like them. And it was like, argh. It was aggression. It was a lot of aggression. And that's part of my journey from bankruptcy to sexy boss, because I feel now I'm a lot softer and I'm more feminine and I'm more who I am. And I don't feel like I have to beat people up. But there was definitely a period in my life I felt like I had to be that way to survive. I had to be short hair, and I wore suits that covered my boobs and turtlenecks and flat shoes because that's what the guys were wearing. I didn't wear skirts. I didn't wear heels. I didn't have my nice hair and makeup. I didn't do any of that because I didn't want to attract anything, right? So I covered up my big boobs. I covered all that up when I was working. So there's a journey, I think, that happens not only in career but also on a personal level with women, is them finding their own voice. And I feel like now, at the age of 40, I finally have my own voice. I don't feel like I have to prove anything in the process. And I think that's really important. And that's why my book was so important, is that it's coming out of the shell of truly who I am. That's the bankruptcy.
See, I love this story because, I mean, so many of us go through this. I mean, it's, we see how men get, we watch men, and to some degree we have to emulate them because they're doing what needs to be done. But when you can also bring your feminine side back into it, I think that's more powerful than just getting out there and mowing everything down. Look, I had the same journey. You know, I used to just, well, I'm still known for kind of saying what I'm thinking and then going, oops, there, I don't have much in the way of filters, so I have to be very, very cautious. But I have learned over time to be as feminine as I want to be, because really that's where my power is. I'm not a male. I don't want to be a male, but I do want to pick up some of their attributes, the ones that work. I'm absolutely willing to use those.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Sounds like you did the same thing.
I did the same thing, especially when I was in corporate environment. I was very, that was where I really picked it up. And then I traveled the country. And by the way, it was me and four guys. Okay, so there you go, that. And I had to be one of the boys a lot, which, again, I'm fine. I'm not derogatory. It's just like it was the environment. And so I picked up on their behavior, their ways of thinking. And that's really helped me in life. But when the bankruptcy happened, that was kind of like going 60 miles an hour, because we were at $1 million a year, and went from 60 miles an hour, 80 miles an hour, to literally hitting a wall. That's the experience. And when you hit a wall in life, literally, either physically or hypothetically, could be a divorce for you, could be bankruptcy, whatever it is, like the hit, okay? You, when you kind of come from the ashes, when you're like, feel like you're broken, which is what I felt like. There was just, everything was stripped away from me, everything financially. My house was gone. I had to sell everything I had, bankruptcy, foreclosure, the whole nine yards. I was living in my car. And when you're stripped like that, for me, I felt like, well, it's like you can't go back to the way things were. You had to find who you are and really start anew. And that was that journey of finding out who I really was and really my truly voice, and then trusting that that voice will actually take me somewhere, right? And that took years. It wasn't like an overnight process. because I realized that everything that I had been successful at up until that point came from a place of aggression and survival and, you know, kind of a, I have this vision of like two lions, like tearing things up. That's kind of where it came from, because I feel like I had to prove something all the time. And when you can let that go, for me, when I let that go, like I don't have to prove it, I just have to be it and start to actually do things that work for me, whew, things just so much easier. Now, they're not easy, they're just easier, right?
And they flow better.
They flow better, yeah. And
yeah,
that's why the book came out of me. It's telling the story of a female that grew up, you know, my dad was an entrepreneur. He was a successful one in our family. So I grew up emulating him. And then I grew up in a male-dominated industry, and I emulated them. So me coming out and starting to wear skirts and heels and me starting to – when you look at my imagery now on my Facebook, it's very feminine because it's really who I am. That's really who I am. That's not all made up. That's really me. It's an everyday me. But before that, it was way more masculine. And so now I have a little more balance between my masculine and feminine energy. And I do find that my feminine energy is way stronger than my masculine energy. It's just a lot more grounded, right? And again, it's not a bash on men. It's just it's an energy conversation and finding that kind of yin and yang within oneself. And that's what I call sexy boss. So to me, just to finish up that, is like sexy boss. Who is a sexy boss? People ask me that. Sexy boss is the boss part is owning your life, owning all areas of your life and being fully responsible for all of it. The sexy is owning your sexuality, like whoever that is, right? Owning your sexuality. And in chapter 7 in Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill, he talks about sex transmutation, one of the most unread chapters of that book. And he talks about sex transmutation as one of the most powerful energies we have as human beings, right? And so it's owning that. It's owning that piece of us. And that's what a sexy boss is. It could be a guy or a girl, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. James Artree in the chat room, going back to what you said just a moment ago, says most males are not mentally competing with women. They are competing for themselves. And he says that this is the same mindset that women should adopt. Compete with yourself and nobody else.
Ooh,
what
I love
that.
That's
like
really
it as well.
Good.
He's a smart guy. He's a friend of mine. He's a very smart guy.
I love that. I'm going to add to that. What was his name?
Sorry, his name is James Artree, A-R-T-R-E.
James. So, James, I'm going to add to that. So
he's
in
Texas,
book,
by the way.
He's in Texas? Oh, well, welcome.
Mm-hmm.
In that book, Think and Grow Rich, Napoleon Hill, he talks about sex transmutation. I'm just going to go there for just a second. Feel free to stop me. But what that book is about, because you got to remember, it was written in the 20s. Okay, 20s and 30s, which was obviously career-wise, it was very male-dominated, and everything he says in the book has a he perspective, and that's fine. It doesn't bother me. But it still can be translated in the feminine space, right? But the sex transmutation talks about, we call that when a man walks in a room and he looks dapper, kind of like a James Bond, we call that like, oh, he's sexy, you know? Like, we call that charismatic. That's what we call it. In society, when someone walks in a room, you're like, who is that, right? That's charismatic. George Clooney, right? Very very dapper man walks in a room. Ooh, who's that? So that's a person. That's a man who owns their sexuality. He has high sexual energy, and he allows it to be. I mean, he allows it out. He doesn't what I call confine it or push it down. He's open. Like, it's almost like it's open energy. That's why people are attracted to him. There's a charismatic. He's dapper. He feels good about himself. There's a confidence level of that when you allow that out. And it'll come out either way. That's what the book talks about. It's like, it's going to come out either way. All right. So sometimes it comes out in a negative way. People do affairs, things like that. It'll come out negatively. Now, female, the moment a female tries to what I call push down her sexuality, it's like a time bomb about to go off. It's just a negative thing. Have you ever come to a room where you see this woman and she's not dressed seductively? She's just dressed, I don't know, you can tell she's dressed confidently. She feels good about herself. She walks in and everyone sees her. She might not be the most beautiful woman in the world, but there's something about her. There's something about her or him. That's what we call charismatic. The problem is in the female space, in the old days we call that, oh, you know, she's a bitch, is what we call it. B word, sorry.
Aww.
A B word.
Yep.
Because like, oh, well, she's trying to own the room, or she's, you know, that's what we used to do, right? Like, oh, well,
people still do it. It's not gone. Trust me.
Yeah, it's not gone. And so part of the book talks about that sexual orientation is being able to own all of that. And like he said, is when you compete with yourself and see where you're at and just own who you are, it's very attractive. And that's the part of the sexy boss that I feel is so empowering. And once I started owning my own sexuality, it's like I'm a female, you know, I got big boobs, you know, like that's who I am, you know, and owning that space and not leading with it, but just owning it, then I can speak to whatever situation's going on business-wise and feel confident. There's a confidence and a groundingness, and that's where the attractiveness comes in and hopefully creating possibilities and opportunities in business. So I agree with him. Good technique.
Yeah, and he said, remember, I grew up in a household with 8 women in 1 bathroom, so that explains everything you need to know about James. He gets us. He really does.
Oh, yeah, that does explain it. Oh, wow. Woo! That's a lot of progesterone. Not very much testosterone.
Isn't it, though? Yep. All of those hormones running around, he's a poor guy. But anyway, so I wanted to – thank you, James. What I wanted to ask you, I wanted to go back to the bankruptcy because I think that's really important to your story here. And you've come such a long, long ways. You said this was in 2007. It wasn't that long ago. So in, what, less than a decade, you have literally rebuilt yourself. And, I mean, look at you. So what did you do first? I mean, you're living in your car. What did you do? What steps did you take? And by the way, I have to say this, just a personal aside. I love that you told the story that you had to take care of you, that, you know, you, I think, honestly, I think if more people weren't given everything on a plate, they'd be a lot more productive, decent human beings. I think you have to go through some hardships in order, you know, trial by fire, if you will. You can't just walk around and have your parents pay for everything, bail you out, and turn into a decent human. I just don't believe you can.
I agree. I agree with that. I mean, this is coming from a person. I didn't have a backup plan. There was no backup plan. Mm-hmm. I don't have a trust fund. There was no, like, basement I could, like, you know, go sleep at. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I think when you don't have that backup, you know, you figure it out. That's the only way I can say that.
Listen, I was the oldest of a bunch of kids, and my mom made it very clear to every one of us. I'm not sure she sat us down and, you know, wrote chapter and verse, but we understood that when we left home, be it out of high school or got married or whatever it was that we were going to do, we weren't coming back. And not one of us ever asked to go back home. In fact, she downsized as quick as she could. I mean, she's like, oh, no. You know, her idea, her role was to raise us as, you know, to be as good human beings as we could be, kick us out of the nest and let us go. And she did. Mm-hmm. And I, to this day, you know, at the time I'm thinking, you know, I really could use a hamburger. I wonder if my mom's got any change. I never asked her. I knew better. And I found, grocery money, I found the grocery money. So I think it made me a stronger person.
Yeah, and I think that's why. So for me, when when the bankruptcy happened, so everyone has their story, you know, about whatever. For me, I had this, just to be clear, I had this, the one thing worst thing that ever happened to me was bankruptcy for me, okay? Mm-hmm. Because my parents got divorced, I've been through that. There's all this other stuff I've gone through in life. But it, for me, I had this like, well, I'm smart. That'll never happen.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
I am a smart cookie. I'll take care of myself. I'm going to take care of myself since I was 16. I kind of attitude with it. I'm going to take care of myself since I was 16. I don't need you, all right? I don't need anyone. I got this handled. I got my first house by the time I was 29 without anyone's help, right? So I got great credit. I got life figured out. And I'm making a lot of money. And I just had this, like, that will never happen to me. Okay, that was probably my first mistake. And so here I am. I'm in a business relationship, business partner, and we're cooking it. And again, this is a situation where I'm what I call behind the scenes. I'm running the lot, doing the affiliate, creating the list, doing all the back end stuff, creating the seminars. He's the front end. He's the, we call him the space, the guru, right? The face, the teacher. And I'm the one in the back scenes running everything. And so that was our business relationship. And everything was going fine. We went really quickly, $0 to $1 million in 1 year. And then one day I went away for a 2-day marketing seminar, came back, and I came back and everything was gone. All the accounts were gone, merchant accounts moved over, all the bank accounts were cleared out, wiped out overnight. And I put all my eggs in this basket. And so it was literally like a stripping because I had nothing to fall back on. Now, I wish I had Uber. I probably would have started Ubering the next day and I would have had some money. But there was like nothing. I had been focused on this for so long a year. I had nothing in the background going on. So I just fell. And my house went into foreclosure within 2 or 3 weeks, started the process. And then I had to file bankruptcy within 6 months. I had to be wiped out because I had all the debt of the business too on top of that. And so I had to clear it out. So I literally wiped out. The house was gone within the year. Now, yeah, remember, this is 2006. So if you're into real estate, you know that was the beginning of the – so my house 6 months earlier could have sold for like 40% more. But at that time, it was right when everything started just going crashing. And my house all of a sudden was down 30%. I'm like, whoa, right? So,
but see, that's when I bought my house. You know, I bought at a really good price and a really good time for me, not for the owner.
Yeah. So for me, I was really SOL. I tried to sell it really fast. I was down 30% underneath the mortgage. So anyway, here I am. So long story short, I within a year sold everything I had. It was me, my dog, and my truck. I had a Pathfinder, and luckily it's paid off, so that's good. And that's all I had. And literally for about 2 or 3 years, the only bills I had was food and the cell phone and gas and insurance. I mean, that was my whole overhead in life, and I didn't know what to do. And I actually ended up this is where the groveling came, because I had to ask for help for people. I had to ask for help, and I lived on people's couches for a couple months here and there. I was really in a chaos. I was in a swirling. And I ended up in Marco Island, living in a friend's house in Marco Island. And for a year, I was there. It's gorgeous. Marco Island's gorgeous, so it was nice. And for a year, it's like I let myself do nothing. Now, that's hard. I'm a driven personality. So I let myself just be. And looked at the sunset every day. And just kind of let myself, what I call, relax. And the one advice I got was from Richard Flint, a dear friend of mine in Florida, who's an amazing, amazing mentor of mine. And he tells me this particular lesson, and it's one of the life lessons I still live by, and I actually have it right next to me on the day that I wrote it back in 2008. And the life lesson is this, like a life rule, really. It's a rule. And the rule is, does this feed my confusion or strengthen my clarity? He goes, I want you to start asking that question before everything you do. Does this feed my confusion or strengthen my clarity? Now, what you need to know is at the time, I think I had to ask him for $20 to go back to Marco Island after I went to drive to visit him. And I'm thinking to myself, what does that mean? And he's like, you're in chaos and you're swirling and you're listening to everybody else because you don't know who to listen to. So I want you to start asking yourself this question on everything you do, even down to what you eat, like the littlest things. And you want to start to look at what it is you're doing. Is it doing for them or is it really doing it for yourself? And it's a question
I
ask.
So you're means testing.
Everything. I'm sorry?
So you're means testing everything.
Yes. Yes.
That's
yes,
brilliant.
Exactly. It's brilliant. And it's what I do today. Even right now, doing this show with you, does it feed my confusion or strengthen my clarity? It strengthens my clarity because I'm adding value to you and I'm adding value to the listeners and I'm adding value to myself. I mean, there is a selfish component to it, right? I'm getting my word out. So it adds clarity, right? It's everything I do now comes from, does it feed my confusion or strengthen my clarity? Down to little things, big things, relationships, where I live, like all of it. That was one of the biggest things he gifted me was that question. And it really did change my life around. People ask me, how did you get through? How did you get back? It's through that question that I was able to say, I'm ready to get back in the game for me. I'm ready to start a business again for me. And I'm going to do it from a place of clarity and confidence. And then from there, I'll have my freedom. And that's where it all came from.
That is, I just wrote that down. I'm going to put that on my whiteboard, and thank you for that. I have to ask you, though, do you recognize now that you were actually in the process of grief? Because clearly you were going through the grief process at that time.
Yes, that's interesting. I did. I had a someone did suggest that to me, yes, and I did actually what I call go through some grief completions, completing things, writing things out, forgiving, completing, kind of a completing of old self. Absolutely. I mean, it is a grieving process. For me, it was a thing called a bankruptcy and a foreclosure, but it was literally a grieving of the old, an old me, not even a real me, like an old me, right? And so now I can honestly feel and say everything I'm speaking from is me. It's my higher self. It's 100% who I really truly am. It's not a trying to get anywhere approved to you or any of that, you know? So absolutely, it was a massive grieving process, all right? And grief can be all kinds of things. You know, it was a grieving of feeling like I had failed myself because I lost my house. And it was my first house I ever bought. I'm so excited, right? 29 years old. I'm like, I bought my first house. I felt I arrived on some level. And it was just taken. And I felt a lot of grief around that. And I know it's just a physical thing called a house, but there's a connection to it from I was proud of myself and then now I wasn't. And there's a process of forgiving myself through the process, right? And I think it happens every day. It's not over for me. It's never over for me. It's a constant, how do I move through life where I feel confident in myself and create value for others? And I ask that question to myself every single day. It's ongoing.
So I can well imagine. I mean, if anybody is really in tune with what is going on with their higher self, that should be something that is ongoing. I mean, you don't just get up in the morning and brush your teeth and go, well, now what? I mean, I don't think that's how we're supposed to actually live. So I wanted to ask you, you took this advice to heart clearly, and I am going to take it and utilize it in my life too, and thank you so much for that. But what were your steps after that? Once you started asking yourself and means testing everything that you were doing, thinking, eating, drinking, what did you do next? I mean, clearly you got up off the couch and said, okay, I'm done with the grieving. I'm done with this baloney. Whoever this guy was, heck with him. Karma will get his butt on his way out, whatever. What did you do next? What steps did you take next?
So it's interesting. So I'm in Marco Island, and what you need to know about Marco Island, if you know Florida, it's the very, 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 very bottom mm-hmm. of Florida, yeah. And it's a tiny little island. It's only 2 miles by 4 miles. It's tiny. The only thing I land on there is they don't let anything commercial on there, which I find interesting because they only allow one Starbucks, but then like 3 Walgreens. Right? So the average age is 80. So you just got to get the world of it. It's gorgeous, but the average age is 80. Okay, so it's a retirement community, obviously. And it was actually a good place for me because I learned a lot. I met some amazing people at the other side of their life. And here's what I learned. And I'm going to answer your question by answering this. Here's what I learned. The people that I met, because by the way, when you're retired and you're in this beautiful community, what are you going to do all day? Either you're going to hang out in your own house or you're going to go to Starbucks. So when people go to Starbucks, it's not like New York where they're in and out. They go to Starbucks and they're there all day. It's a coffee shop. Like, they're there all day. So you just go there and just start talking to somebody. And they're like, hi, what's your name? Like, that's how they are there. It's really funny. So I met these amazing people. And what I learned is that the individuals that were, maybe they're 80, but they're just, they're feisty. They're out there like, oh, yeah, I'm loving life. I went for a walk today, whatever it is, right? I learned they're the ones who are happiest. They're the ones that built something. They built something. Whatever it was, a business, an invention. One guy built this amazing travel company, and he's given it to his son, whatever. They're the ones that, like, they had life. They had life. The ones that they worked for the government for 25 years, and then all of a sudden, like, you're retired, you can go home now, and then they come to Marco Island. Within months, one, they're really mad at life for some reason, and they were sick really fast. Like, they would go downhill really fast. And that's what I learned. I learned it's not about the money, it's about what you built. And there is no retirement. Because the ones that had built something, they didn't feel they were retired. They just felt like they were on to the next adventure. It was about building something. And that was the moment. I'd been there for a year, and I just kind of woke up one day, no kidding, and said, I'm ready. I'm ready to build something because that's who I am. I don't want to get just a job. I want to build something. I'm ready to be an entrepreneur again because I really got that's who I was. So I woke up and my sister is in Austin. I'm from Texas, and Austin was doing very well on a financial level. Florida was in the boomers. It was down the dumps. This is 2008-09, so it was really down. And I said I'm ready to get back, and so I moved to Austin. Now I want to. This was the clear jump. I said I don't know what I'm gonna do, but I'm not a tree. I can move. So what's one thing I could do? I can leave the environment I'm in, and I can go to an environment that's in a place where people are up to something, they're creating things, and it's an entrepreneurship positive environment. That's all I did. That was my move. That was my move. Like, okay, I'm going to get back in the game. What can I do? Well, I can get to a place where I'm surrounded by other entrepreneurs who are up to things. Right? That's what I did. That was my only decision. And when I got here, I actually started working with a group here called Internet Marketing Party. I go to their events every single year for the last like 7 years or 6 years. And I surrounded myself with entrepreneurs. And when you surround yourself with other people that are up to the same things, like if you're an actor, you go to LA, right? If you want to be on Broadway, you go to New York. Like you surround yourself with the other people that you want to be surrounded by, then what happens? Opportunities happen. Opening, opening, opening. And so that's when I started my business in 2008. Ryan Dice of Digital Marketer and Perry Belcher actually approached me and said, hey, we want to start a business with you. Let's start a business with you. So they helped me start my first business again. And then after a year, they said, hey, we're restructuring our business. We're going to give your business back. Here's your whole business. And then I've been running with it ever since by myself. So that's what happened. But that's the move I made. I just woke up one day and said, I'm ready to get back in the bullpen, you know. And I knew my why. It wasn't about the money. It's about I want to build something. I want to wake up when I'm 80 and go, I built this, whatever that is, right? Look what I did over my lifetime, and I'm not done. I don't know. I might build something again when I'm 80. So it's about about knowing that you're not a tree. You can move. And that's really important. And I learned that from a mentor of mine who said when he wanted to get into real estate, he was in L.A., he was struggling, and one of his mentors said, hey, you're not, you know, this thing called U-Haul, you're not a tree, you can move. So he moved to New Mexico, and like 30 years later, he's a freaking multimillionaire because he could buy houses in New Mexico. He could buy houses in L.A. It's too expensive. So he's now bought and sold houses for 30 years in New Mexico and is an amazing entrepreneur there, Doug Ottersberg. And he told me that, and I said, you're right, I can move. Go to a location, surround yourself with people that are up to the same thing. And a friend of mine this year is dropping everything. And he's moving to Atlanta because that's where movies are being made. He wants to be in the movies, so he's going to Atlanta because that's where it's happening. So when people get all about, well, this is happening in my life, in my town, like, you're not a tree, you can move. It's called U-Haul. Go where you want to be. Go where others are creating things that you want to create. So that's how I got to where I'm at.
That's brilliant. But I have to ask, how did you do it with no money?
Oh, wow. So, well, let's see. I got a few jobs in Marco Island. I tried to be a waitress. I'm really bad at that. I'm not a very good waitress, by the way. I did a few jobs online, some virtual assistant stuff. I did some consulting here and there. I got here. I did some kind of little consulting jobs for people, stuff like that along the way, affiliate marketing stuff, until I just hit it with my business. So I stayed in the industry. I reached out to a bunch of people in the industry and said, hey, I'm available to work. How can I help? I do great with affiliate marketing. Did a bunch of affiliate marketing stuff. So I did some consulting until I got my feet off the ground and then just really ran with my business. Now, I wish there was
story.
Uber because I would have Ubered. I would have Ubered like in 5 minutes. I've been like, let's Uber. You know, I mean, literally the day after my bankruptcy, I'm like, let's go Uber. You know what I mean? I wish there was something like that back then, because I would have done it in a heartbeat. The problem was in Florida, there was no jobs. I mean, it was so challenging. So that's why I moved to Austin and started the process of that. So that was why I started. That's why I moved to Austin, because my sister was like, there's jobs here. So, and I did do some consulting, and I just kept going and kept going until, you know, you can't wait for perfect. That's the key. You can't wait for perfect. There is no perfect. You just start.
You're right. And I have to remind myself of that all the time. I'm a recovering perfectionist, and You know, it's one thing that I'm constantly saying, just do it, take action. It's not going to be perfect. You can change it later. And it's a constant struggle I have with myself. Oh, so what are the, so once you got there and you started, you know, just kind of doing everything that you've been doing now, I know that you work with a lot of people. So what is the one thing that you see that holds people back from either, you know, deciding they're not a tree and moving or building a business? Is there any kind of one commonality there?
Yeah, we already said it, but I'll say it again. It's the don't wait for perfect. They wait for some kind of sign. You probably heard that old story about the guy who was on a boat and waiting for God to come down. And he sent a helicopter and he sent a boat. And he's like, but you didn't send me whatever. It's like that, you know. An opportunity would come up, I would means test it basically, and then I just go for it because it was what was in front of me, right? I wouldn't analyze everything. I wouldn't self-analyze everything. I would just be open to what's possible, right? And then I'd means test it. I would say, does it feed my confusion or strengthen my clarity? Does it bring me money? Okay, great. Well, that strengthens my clarity. Awesome. I'll do it, you know. So you just keep going. The challenge with entrepreneurship that people don't like is it's never perfect. Never a clear path.
Not even close. Never linear.
And that's what freaks people out. There is no linear path at all. It's a journey.
It's an adventure. It really is. As we were talking about before the show started, I put up a little graphic on my Facebook page where it's this graph that's line up, down, up, down, up, down, up, down, and you know, basically, you know, you start out going, oh, I can do this. Oh, God, I can't do this. Oh, man, this is going to work. Oh, man, I suck. And you're back and forth, and you have to have a cast iron stomach to do this. But you also have to have just an absolute knowing that what you're doing is the right thing for you. And I think that's where entrepreneurs differ from employees. You know, we're going to blast through rock faces if we have to. We'll crawl over it, you know, crawl under the rubble if we have to. But we're going to do it because we just don't know that we can't do it. And I think that's the big thing with entrepreneurs. We just know. And, you know, we may be flying in the face of all wisdom, but we just know. Don't you find that?
Absolutely. You just have to, I mean, for me, one of the life lessons, like I said, is speaking my confusion, strengthen my clarity. I just listen to that. That's a big one. I was just interviewed on a local KXA and NBC and about don't wait for perfect. The whole segment was about that. It's on my page. But it's about, you just have to take action on what's in front of you, even if you don't see 10 miles down the road or even a mile down the road, right? So how did I start my first business? My first business, just to let you know, is I started teaching men how to date women, right? So I have a book called book out about that, adaintriggers.com, justdateyoungerwomen.com. And here's why I started that. I had all this knowledge about information marketing and how to sell online. I had all this knowledge. But what I didn't want was I didn't want to go start teaching real estate, right? That wouldn't be, it's 2008, so that won't work. And I wasn't doing it. And I didn't want to go teach people how to do stuff online because I felt out of integrity about that because I wasn't making money online, right? I was broke. So a friend of mine said, well, why don't you teach something, use your skill set of what you know how to do online, but teach something that no one could ever, ever, ever question you on. I was like, great, what's that? Teach men how to date women. Oh, that's interesting, right? Basically teaching men how we think. Well, no one could question me on that ever, ever, ever. Why? Because I'm a woman, right? So it gave me confidence. So I said, yes. So that's what started it. That's the one that Ryan Dice suggested. So I went with it. And then I've still have it going to this day. Now, from there, I built other things. I have a supplement company, E2 Lab. I have a weight loss company with my boyfriend, SkinnyBeam.com. I coach people now. Plus, I have the dating business. And on it goes. Because once you have the skill set of sales and marketing online, you can build anything. Right? So that's what I have now. I'm building something.
Well, good for you. And if Ryan Dice suggests something, just do it. I'm just going to say that right now. Just do it. Listen, we are just about to stop streaming. We're still recording, but we're just about to stop streaming. So I know that you have a way for people to get 3 free chapters of your book, Sexy Boss. tell people where they can find you very quickly online, your primary website, and how can they get those three chapters.
Wonderful. Thank you. So my main website is heatherhavenwood.com. If you're interested in working with me, click on the upper right-hand side to work with Heather and get on a phone call with me and have a conversation. If you're interested in my book, Sexy Boss, you can get three free audio chapters, because I did write it on Audible or spoken on Audible, and it's three free audio chapters of Sexy Boss, and there's two ways to do that. You can go to sexybossinc.com, sexybossinc.com, and you can get there, opt in, or you can text the word sexy, S-E-X-Y, to 72,000. So you text the word sexy to 72,000, and you can get it right there on your phone. So right, as you're listening, you can go ahead and get on your phone and listen to the first three audio chapters of my book.
I'm going to do that right now. Well, Heather,
yeah,
thank you so much. Oh, listen, this has been just a great conversation, and thank you for being with me here today. It's been wonderful chatting with you, and I know our audience enjoyed the takeaways. I know the people in the chat room were loving it. And the show will be available for download in about an hour. You can also find us in iTunes. Just type in our names, Denise Griffiths and Heather Ann Havenwood, or Heather Havenwood. And I will see you next week. Heather, thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you, sweetie.
You can find Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com or at gottagovirtualnow.com. Thank you for joining us on Your Partner in Success Radio.